Electronics. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. It's Saturday, February 11th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today's rundown, a bit of geek news, and our special guest, Congressman Sam Farr, about internet privacy, security, and the role of the federal government. During the second half of the show, your questions and comments.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for this podcast and for the geekspeak.org site is provided by gnihosting.com.
It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your co-host, Drew Meyer. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we'll do some geek news, and then we'll discuss privacy, security, and the role of the federal government with our special guest, Congressman Sam Farr from our own Central Coast here. During the second half of the show, we welcome your participation in the discussion. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or contact us now directly on the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click Contact Us. I'll give out our contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, call 423-2447. All right, this is Geek Speak. My name's Drew Meyer. In the air room with me are geeks John Tracy, technical support engineer from Surf Control, Miles Elam, and technical trainer at Surf Control, Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA, myself, Drew Meyer, a product manager at NetApp, Network Appliance, and Lyle Troxlow, technical coordinator for the UCSC Digital Arts and New Media Program. Welcome, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. So let's see, we've just started off with a little news this morning. Anybody got anything particularly they want to jump on right away? How about John? How about you?
Sure. Virgin Atlantic hosted a flight of the Global Flyer took off earlier this week. I don't have Steve's last name. Pa's name's Steve. He's a millionaire adventure guy. He did this last year. He flew, circumnavigated the world in a single-person aircraft. So he is the first person to ever solo around the world. He did it again this year, and just to add a little bit extra, he retraced most of Charles Lindbergh's steps across the Atlantic as well after he circumnavigated the world. He's flying in a plane created by...
Wait, did he land?
Yeah, he landed in Bournemouth, London. He took off from Florida, circumnavigated the world, went all the way around the world, and then got over Florida, and they said, you've got enough fuel. Your call. You want to go? Go. So he went all the way over. He's going to land in Heathrow. He got rerouted over to Bournemouth, which is just a little bit southwest of Heathrow in London. And, he's there. He's good. It's all good. They lost 750 pounds of fuel. They don't know why yet. They think it's part of this venting system. Same thing happened on the last flight.
Wait a minute. The fuel just drifted off into thin
air. Well, they have this really complex venting system to make sure that the fuel gets... I mean, the plane weighs about 3,000 pounds. When it's fully loaded, the plane weighs about 22,000 pounds. So the plane is mostly fuel at that point of takeoff. So as they're using up the fuel, they have to be really careful that that fuel gets used in a balanced fashion so that it doesn't upset the plane's balance. So they have this really complex venting system.
Wow.
I don't know, personally, if the one thing I don't want to lose on a plane flight is fuel. It seems really bad to me.
Especially when you're trying to go all the way around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, oh no, you know, we're losing the radio signal. Oh, what a drag. We're using fuel. That's a problem.
But it's the second time he's done it. It was hosted by Richard Branson of Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Galactic, Virgin Records, pretty much everything Virgin these days. And the plane was made by Scale Composites, Mojave Desert Company. They're also the guys who made Spaceship One and the Voyager aircraft, which held the previous long-distance record.
And where can we go to read more about this?
Virgin Atlantic, globalflyer.com.
Perfect. All right, Sean, what have you got on deck for us today?
Well, there's a company called Pixel Optics that just won a $3.5 million Department of Defense grant to refine its supervision technology. So think about glasses with electronically controlled pixels embedded into the lenses that they scan your eyeball with an aberrometer. It's a device that measures aberrations that can impede vision. Right now, your glasses correct low-order aberrations, such as farsightedness, nearsightedness, and astigmatism. But these new pixels, this new technology, could not only double the quality of your eyesight, but double the vision, or double the distance of your overall vision.
Wait, so is this like having a screen that you're watching, or is this modifying the light as it comes in?
This is modifying the light as it comes in.
Dynamic lens?
So okay. Basically, yeah, it's exactly a dynamic lens.
So the pixels are altering the light as it comes through.
Yes. Oh, so cool. Ron Blum, the practicing ophthalmologist who invented this technology, realized that there are people out there who have better than 20/20 vision, and science can't explain why. So now he's coming up with technologies that make this possible for anyone.
And so even people who don't need corrective vision?
I suppose, yeah. Even people who don't need it could probably get better vision with this technology.
So apparently we can build it. We have the technology.
We'll see. Hopefully it'll... I'd love to see this happen in my lifetime.
It'd be way cool for, like, pilots, race car drivers, anyone who needs better lighting.
Geeks? Yeah.
All right.
Well, the government thinks it's great for their men on the battlefield.
I'm sure.
We could think of some other application.
Yeah, I think, yes.
All right, so Miles, what's going on with you?
There's a bit of a hubbub going on about the new version of Google Desktop. One of the features of Google Desktop is being able to search across computers, particular option in there. What that does, unless you explicitly go in and disable that feature, is will selectively copy some files off your system and store them on Google servers. Some of this has been touted as being a backup storage medium. And, I mean, there are some good reasons behind it. They haven't yet committed to whether or not they're going to be advertising or not. They haven't ruled out the possibility. But the Electronic Freedom Foundation has come out asking users not to use the new version. And this comes in light of the recent subpoenas that the U.S. government has been making on search companies. So it's a combination of you have your own personal files that, you know, having a backup copy of them is never a bad thing. But what happens if the U.S. government can simply make a subpoena to these companies to get that information? For example, the government would not be able to gather all this information on their own. But how is that separate from them being able to issue a subpoena to a private company, which, or a public company in this case, that is able to do this or is not barred by law?
We're gonna talk about this whole Google subpoena thing also with the congressman.
With Sam, yeah, we will.
Okay.
All right, so Lyle, have you got any news for us today?
Yeah, I've got some. So I've been really interested in, one of the things I focus on in my reading and stuff is on new materials. New materials really help shape what high tech's going to happen. I mean, the reason why we have transistors is because of new materials, really. But new coating coming out of a company called Ecology Coatings. Sally Ramstad's a co-founder. And basically, she's started looking at the potential environmental benefits of nano coatings instead of industrial paints that are used on car parts and everything you can think of. And basically, when you're dealing with materials that have great attributes like strength and everything, lots of times they have poor corrosion capabilities. So, for example, most of our cars are made of steel, but steel corrodes pretty well. So we have to make sure we paint and coat a lot of these things. And sometimes you choose a component because it can handle a coating rather than because it's the right component for the vehicle. So there's a lot of management about protective layers. And they've made this new coating called a nano coating, and basically just means that it's the particles have attributes that are unusual for small particles. And this one specifically has, they're cheaper and easier to apply. They're more environmentally friendly. And the basic stuff will be scratch protectives for small screens, water protective for like papers. So you could coat cardboard boxes with this material, and you'd have a waterproof cardboard box that is not actually made of plastic like waterproof cardboard boxes are now, but is actually made of paper and has just a coating on it, which does break down relatively well when applied to the right materials. So you're basically allowing paper products to serve another areas that you normally wouldn't be able to air it.
So you could store food in these potentially.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have so many plastic, because that's one of the big things, you know, plastic foils.
Right. And Chinese takeout traditional boxes is paper covered in wax, and it works pretty well. Sometimes it's actually not even paper, it's something fake. This would be paper covered in this material, and then when you broke it down, the paper would dissolve just like paper does, or you'd be able to recycle it again. Nice. So it's kind of cool. I mean, I'm a little tentative to say that this is, you know, green technology because, well, what is this coating? How much of it do you need, and how does it break down? And that details wasn't in the article I read, but it's exciting to see new materials coming into play, and they're touting it as green as one of the selling factors, which means it's important to us, which I agree with.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Drew Meyer. With me in their air room are Geeks Miles, John. Let's see, Miles, John, Sean, and Lyle. We're joined today by telephone from Monterey by the Central Coast Congressman Sam Farr. Throughout his 12-year tenure, Farr has been a leading advocate for California agriculture, an outspoken activist for affordable housing, and a champion of the environment. He now sits on the powerful House Appropriations Committee and on two subcommittees, Agriculture and the Military, Quality of Life and Veterans Affairs. He co-chairs the House Oceans Caucus and the House Travel and Tourism Caucus. Before serving in Congress, Sam served 12 years in the California State Assembly and 6 years as Monterey County Supervisor, graduated from Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, and attended the Monterey Institute of International Studies and the University of Santa Clara. Began his career in public service in 1964, 30 years ago, the celebration's this weekend. And he's fluent in Spanish. He was raised in Carmel, California, and he's married to Sherry Baldwin Farr, and they have one grown daughter, Jessica. Sam, welcome to Geek Speak.
Well, thank you very much. It's not a program that I'm often on. I always think of myself as the geek who doesn't understand the speak. But it's a delight to be here.
Well, we're trying not to bamboozle you today, but we do value your opinion very much, given the position that you have and what you're involved in today. Listen, I'm a little worried about what I see in the papers. It seems like the Justice Department's doing things without talking to my representatives like you. What's going on with the wiretapping, the data collection, and the monitoring that's in the papers these days?
Well, the problem is it's been going on for a long time, and it's all based on so-called national security. This administration has ratcheted that term and implementation of that term up to segue into a terrorism threat. So what you're seeing or learning is that they're circumventing the law to justify their means, which is, you know, still I think the country is not as upset as it should be about these things because the president keeps saying, well, we're just monitoring Al-Qaeda calls. But in order to do that, they got to monitor everything else and filter things out. So Congress and the Senate, frankly, has been ahead of the House being able to criticize the administration. We have this Patriot bill up now that can address these problems. I think where the legislative body is that if there are problems with the law, then the administration ought to bring those problems to us so that we can adjust them. But we don't want to give him just the ability to get access to intercept phone calls without some third-party approval. It's worked pretty well when we've gone through the court system to be able to privately ask for a warrant from a judge and lay out all the rules of why you think you need that warrant. And I said, that's the way we think it ought to go.
So it seems like the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution about unreasonable search and seizure would sort of seem to come into play here. Am I off base?
Well, then you have to look to what is the law that's defined unreasonable search and seizure, right? And you'd have to have a lawsuit, and it would go up through the courts, and who knows how this court would come down on that. He's got lawyers on his side saying what he's doing is practically, including the Attorney General, saying that what he's doing is within his purview of law. We disagree.
Sam, mm-hmm. you mentioned a bill that's pending that will address this, but didn't Congress already kind of determine the level at which the president or the administration could do scanning of people information? I mean, isn't it pretty clearly defined already that he's doing something that's outside the law?
I think so. I think so, and I think the majority of my colleagues think so.
So isn't this bill that you're proposing a little redundant?
Why do we need a bill to enforce the law that already exists?
Well, you tighten up where the gray areas are.
So you really spell it out in black and white. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so much is going on in this area, as you know, and what I've found, is that our Silicon Valley folks are pretty concerned about the government oversight in developing computers, because they want to sell their computers to foreign, to other markets, foreign markets, and we prohibit them using or selling essentially computers with certain devices in them. We feel that would be a violation of our national security to give them the technology to do it. However, other, Europe can do it, and that just means you go offshore and develop your hardware offshore and sell it from somewhere else, because those controls aren't held by other countries, and essentially keeps America then out of that market. And I think, we're really coming to an era where the question of whether we can maintain our privacy, as we have traditionally been able to do it, or whether we are going to, as a society, give up some of that to have some kind of a national ID or sometime a chip or whatever, a credit card or in the body. I mean, people are putting them in their dogs so they get lost.
And their kids, right? I mean, some parents do it for their kids.
Hey, John, you looked at a story this morning for our news section that we didn't quite get to it, but I think it's relevant here.
Yeah, this is from the Christian Science Monitor. It's China's model for a censored internet. It's basically concerning the flow of information and the control of the flow of information. What China's elected to do is not keep people from the internet, but instead create their own internet. So they control the flow of information on it, and they've geared it more toward a business-oriented model instead of the rather dissenting
free culture model
that we have of the internet here.
North Korea, you said the same thing is sort of happening?
No, in North Korea and I believe in Cuba, they do it a different way, where they actually control the information by not letting people access the information. They control access to the internet very strictly there.
So I guess what we see is that the governments are controlling access to the information in order to protect themselves from accountability. And I'd like to think that we're far from that kind of a situation in the United States, but
we're not.
What kind of conclusion should we draw?
Well, first of all, what's happening on the Hill with Wikipedia, members of Congress or their staffs are looking up editing the profiles that are on Wikipedia about members, some of them which are very negative based on fact.
Now, is this each member editing their profile, or just members editing other members' profiles?
No, I presume it's editing their own members' profile.
Okay. Making themselves look
better. You really don't have time to do other members. and then I understand... I understand now that Wikipedia has cut off the House and the Senate from from adding their input into the site.
Have you done it? Have you had you or your staff edit your entry?
No, in fact, you know what? A constituent of mine just 2 weeks ago asked me if I'd ever seen my profile on Wikipedia, and I said, no, I hadn't. They printed it out, and I was very pleased with it.
Luckily. So someone's on your side, I guess. I mean, the thing is, you can see in the press how people paint different politicians. It can be really negative if it's your adversary painting the picture. And that's the thing about Wikipedia, which is really scary, is that anyone can do it. So it really depends on how much the governing body, if you will, which is pretty light with Wikipedia, decides where to take it. I mean, if they wanted to be extremely conservative, they could change all of Wikipedia to be very conservative.
I think we really have, this is essentially a new frontier. It's a frontier of information. We get so much of it, but to keep that information based on fact and accurate, the rumor mill it certainly carries over into Congress, and I've watched people on the floor of the Congress make statements that are just totally false.
Right, about technology.
Yeah, and about using facts that aren't supported or things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to think that the floor was a place that was sort of sacred, and what you would sit on the floor, because it's all recorded and everything. Of course, there's no libel if you speak on the floor of the House or the Senate. You can't be sued for libel, so...
There's a group out there today called the Free Software Foundation, and it's really the whole free software movement's founded by a group called, a guy named Richard Stallman and the GNU operating system that he designed. And one of their fundamental tenets is that information wants to be free. And that means free like in free speech, not like free beer. So more eyeballs looking at something means a higher quality of it and an increase in the ability to transfer that knowledge, which is beneficial to everybody. And that kind of flies in the face of what's happening here with the current administration locking down and tightening on what people are actually able to see and able to do and not providing that on sort of a free basis. And I think that's kind of at the root of what us technologists have an issue with here.
And I think you're right. I believe that transparency is what is the glue that holds the belief that that our system of government works. As you stated in the opening of the program, I served in county government in Sacramento, and you essentially focus on the government you're in. So when you're in the county, you're looking at all the assets of the county and all the responsibilities of the county. When you're state, it's the state. When you go to the federal government, it's sort of like the first wake-up call, my God, this is not only about all 50 states, but it's also about how we react to the world. And then realizing how delicate this whole system is. My God, it's only a couple of people. You know, it's the president and vice president and a couple of people that are head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and a couple of Supreme Court justices, and that's it. I mean, it is so based. It's got to be based on a faith that the system works. And I always, when Peace Corps taught me that if you lead, people will follow, but they've got to know that essentially it's honest, it's fair. And I think that we're in this frontier of now we're not going to know what is fair and honest. If you have all these conflicting opinions, unless you have some legal base that allows transparency to be the kind of the judge of issues.
Well, Congressman
makes sense
Farr,
to me.
Yeah, I have a question for you. This is in regards to a news story I did earlier with regard to the government, for example, aside from certain activities recently, has not been able to simply outright spy on its citizens. Has not been able to simply carte blanche, make a wiretap without a court order and the like. Mm-hmm. But then I wonder about the subpoenas that are going out to search engines and the like, where the government would be, in fact, using a private or public corporation as a proxy to do the things that it's not allowed to do directly. Like, is there any legislation having to do with this that's on the docket or...
Does that make sense? Are you with us on that?
So, yeah, I'm not sure. Some of these things I'm not sure, but I will as to details. But I'll make sure that if anybody sends me an email on it, I'll get a really clear answer for you.
Okay.
So I think
we did the Digital Millennium Copyright Act back in '98, and that was a voice voted. It was sort of unanimous in Congress. It criminalized the production of technology that can circumvent measures taken to protect copyrighted material. And that has obviously been a big battle now on the liability of online providers from copyright infringement. There is some bills in Congress to modify that now.
Mm-hmm. Has this changed your behavior online at all, everything we're talking about? Like when you go out and surf, do you think twice about typing something into Yahoo or Google?
No.
No. Well, naturally, you weren't typing anything that was sketchy in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And I think that comes back to what you said earlier, that in order for the government to monitor what's going on and tell who's doing something bad and who's doing something good, you have to watch everybody. And that doesn't seem very practical. Are we about to fund a program that manages something like that?
No. I think what you do is... I don't know if you've ever had anybody from the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey on your program.
But we haven't.
Really, we have an incredible technology in that school.
Okay.
And what they do is that when Silicon Valley is building machinery, anybody's high-tech industry building equipment for the military, for the government that's supposed to be secure, they try it before they buy it down at the Naval Postgraduate School. And I don't know how the Navy's been able to do it, but they've actually got people that are really good hackers working for the Navy, and they've been able to hack into intelligence agencies and everything else. And of course, they do it by showing them where they're weak. But they really know this stuff cold, and very very smart people there. And I can put you in touch with some of them. Maybe on your program sometime.
They're probably all high school kids.
Yeah, that would be great, Sam. We'll definitely do that.
All right, so.
But I want to just, you know, this government does work. I mean, it really works, but we don't teach it. We don't teach people how to use it. We teach you names of cities and capitals and veto and override and words, but we don't teach you how to petition your government. And I can tell you that people that communicate with elected officials, emails, phone calls, any way you want to get there, slug mail, it all works because we're all elected for 2 years. So our contract's up every 2 years, and every legislator is always looking over their shoulder at their district and saying, how's the stuff racking in my district? How do the people? And if nobody responds, then the assumption there's nothing wrong.
Well, it's a great opportunity right now to ask Congressman Sam Farr questions because we're opening up the lines. In just a minute, we'll give out the phone numbers.
So, Geek Speak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. This program is also supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to Geek Speak. Our phone answer and fellow web geek Rick Filman awaits your call with questions or comments.
And this morning, right after Geek Speak at 11, in just a half an hour, listen to students from Aroma School join Castle Cottage host Susan Freeman to discuss their experience in the Kids Around the Workplace project. These first and second grade bilingual students will share their discoveries about work as a creative contribution to the world and why people choose the work they do. That's Castle Cottage this morning at 11, right after Geek Speak here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. And we're taking your calls with questions and comments right now to Sam Farr. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
Or use the internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us, and send us an email. Let's see.
Well, the geeks this morning.
The geeks this morning. Miles Elam, myself, Drew Meyer, Lyle Troxell, and John Tracy and Sean Cleveland sitting here to my other side.
And we're speaking to Sam Farr, Congressman Sam Farr, and you're welcome to call in now. There's a couple lines still open, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, we're all checking our email if you'd like to do it that way. All right.
So, Sam, what do you recommend for our audience or our listeners out there? What should they pay attention to, not do differently? What should they write in about that would really, you know, give you the ammunition that you need to do what you think the right thing is, as long as that's representing your constituents?
Well, I think a lot of, first of all, they ought to know who their federal and state legislators are, and then they ought to know whether the problem they're trying to address is a state or federal or local issue. I think most congressional offices do what I do. We're a very active office because this constituency here is extremely active, more so than most other congressional districts. I think it's one because of all the universities in the district, and two because of the high retirement. The cost of living here has attracted a well-educated retirement community that is used to participate in government. But our office utilizes the technology. We do email responses. We send email newsletters. We update our website all the time. We have had online chats on my website. I did it on the BRAC issues last spring. And I encourage all listeners to go to my website and sign up for email updates.
Okay.
What is that website?
That's
Far.house.gov.
Far.house.gov. All right.
Just go to google.com and you can get right into search for Sam Farr and it'll yield it all.
And is there an email address for you?
Yeah, I have an email address. The email is samfarr@mail.house.gov.
Sam Farr, all one word, all together.
Sam Farr, all one word.
Okay.
Mail.house.gov, and then I have a website, which is www.far.house.gov.
You're being very transparent there, Sam. Thank you very much. All right, so line two, Michael in Santa Cruz.
Judith is waiting for us.
All right, Judith in Watsonville. You're on the air. What's your question?
I want to just really appreciate that Congressman Farr, that you've come to talk to us on Geek Speak. And my question has to do with the threat to internet neutrality. I guess some of the big telecommunications companies are talking about trying to make access, have like tiered access where certain things that they want you to see, or you can get to faster, and other things that they don't care about, or you won't be able to get there nearly as fast. And I'm really concerned that that would affect the way that the internet is used, and the freedom and the real vitality of it. And I didn't know whether there's any legislation that would deal with that, or if you're aware of those issues.
Judith, we're gonna take that question off the air because your line's a little messy, but thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Sam, any thoughts on
that question went to net neutrality?
Yeah, how do we protect the individual consumers of the internet from a private company that's in between?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know that we have figured out how to do that yet. I think the threat is essentially companies trying to slow down their competitors.
Mm-hmm. Right. Having things, for example, you would have AT&T or SBC, someone who owned the lines, and being able to meter out, give preference to their services so that, for example, if Google, who is an independent entity, was to offer a service, to then say, we're going to ratchet their bandwidth down.
Getting close to
them. Actually happen when the larger ISPs go after each other.
Yeah, it's interesting because what's happening is all these ISPs are starting to develop like media content, their movies and things like that. And so if they can make the other solution slower, it's bad. I mean, it's
right,
definitely
going toward a more oligopic model.
Yeah, it's bridging into trust and monopolistic practices.
So how would you handle something like this? I mean,
well, I think a lot of these things are going to come at the telecommunications bill when it's we reauthorize bills about every 5 to 7 years, and telecommunications is supposed to be reauthorized. I don't think it'll get done this year. It's an election year, and it's one of the biggest bills. Every lobbyist from every interest in the planet is in Washington trying to get their 2 cents into the legislation, and I don't think there's going to be a ability to get that done this year, but certainly next year, right after the election, it'll be a high priority.
Well,
a lot of these issues will be addressed then.
Sam, if you ever want some technical suggestions, we're full of them.
No,
but
I do
they're
want
worth what
I,
you pay
you know
for.
I really would appreciate it. I'm not certainly the techie in my office, but I do have people, and I would love to. Just email me your suggestions.
Yeah, right. The suggestions might not be good, but we'll make
them. Huh? No, but that's important. Remember, squeaky wheels get the grease. So.
All right. Well, we could squeak, that's for sure. And we got a squeaker online, too, here, Michael.
Can squeak.
Michael, you're asking about recent press conference on surveillance procedures?
Yes. Am I on the air?
You are. Go right ahead.
Hi, Congressman Farr. I'd just like to thank you for being our representative in Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
I'm a great supporter of yours. I wanted to ask you about the president's press conference the other night where he was using an example that of justifying wiretaps not without going through the court process. And he was saying that they were able to hinder a terrorist attack on the West Coast. And I'm not quite sure if the finding out of that terrorist cell had anything to do whatsoever with the ability to wiretap without legal authorization.
Well,
can you
comment
on that?
We weren't in session on Friday and when that news broke, but I think because it's made the headlines, and certainly the largest contingency of members of Congress or members of the House are from the state of California, and most of them from Southern California, they're going to be keenly interested in them not knowing it as well as the mayor and so on, and how is this information derived, and why, as members of the Intelligence Committee, where they can get briefed, that's a select committee that you sit on for up to 3 terms in Congress, and then you have to rotate off and new people come on. But they're the ones that get daily briefings, and of course they can't share what they learn in that room with the rest of members of Congress, but the records are open to us if we want to go up and sign away your if you talk about any of that stuff, then you've broken a rule in the House and can be penalized for it. But anyway, we Anna Eshoo, who represents the mountains of Santa Cruz over into Santa Clara, she sits on the Intelligence Committee. She's another great person to have on this program, I think. You ought to let her know, and I will too. I mean, we're going to try to get the Republicans to do some oversight on this.
Okay, I think that brings us to Bruce in Seaside on line 4. Are you there, Bruce?
Hello.
Hey, your question was about the best way to get in touch with the Congress and passing
ideas. The best way I find I have ideas. A lot of things I see are things, well, me being a geek, I can see that a lot of this stuff that's handed out has no basis on any kind of fact or reasoning. I'd like to pass it on. And what is the best way to do it? A handwritten letter? Typewritten letter?
No, email.
Email?
Or any of your legislators. The best thing to do is email the ones that you can vote for because or they're in their district. Because members of, if we get emails or, I don't know what we do with emails from other states or other districts, but if we get slug mail, we pass it back to that office and say, this, you know, you answer this question. This is your constituent. And the other thing we find that a lot of people do is they kind of want to think, you know, they want us to write back, what are you thinking about this? We don't have time to do that, frankly. We're just putting out fires every day. And we don't really have time to do philosophical discussions. We can give you what our record is and say, you know, this is the way I've been voting in the past, so you can get an indication of where I am on it.
So does that mean, Sam, that we should give a strong, if we're going to contact any representative, we should be presenting our case pretty strong on what we feel?
Yeah, what they're interested in knowing is, what is your opinion? I mean, you want a yes. It's the bottom line is, you want, is this good or bad?
And you want that clearly, and you want it delivered right to you, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in other words, a short thing
in
of,
short is good, and just say this is good or this is bad, because when I go to vote or when I go to mark up bills and all those things, that's what the question is. And then finally, when you go for your final vote on something that's controversy, the question for me is, I got to vote yes or I got to vote no. It's only two choices I get. And you sort of say, is this piece of legislation 51% evil or 51% good? Because there's always good inside of, there's always evil and good in a good bill and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So there's never all totally all bad or all wrong, so you have to do the percentages of what you do it, and those, so your mail helps put us into perspective of how good or how bad this legislation is by your opinion.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So in other words, another thing I'm getting, a handwritten letter is not noticeably more influential than some email that's sent if it's well presented.
That's correct.
That's,
I mean,
exactly right.
Email's so much easier for both sides.
Thanks, Bruce, for the call. And now on to Stuart in Santa Cruz.
Well, let's remind everybody that we're talking with Sam Farr.
Ah, okay. That's what we're doing here.
Congressman Sam Farr is on the line with us. We're taking your calls and questions. You can find out more information about Sam real directly at his website, which has a lot of information and a way to contact him and everything, www.farr.house.gov. So, again, that's house.gov, which would be our
our house in our government.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's Farr, F-A-R-R. So www.farr.house.gov.
I'm getting pretty excited here. Let's go on to Stuart. Stuart in UCSC here. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey,
hey,
you're
Stuart.
On the air.
Yeah, I'm not at
Sam.
UCSC. I'm just a citizen, a former student. I'm a student at Cabrillo now anyway. But first of all, I want to thank Sam for consistently voting in what I think is the right way. But
thank you.
I'm concerned about this story that came out recently where the protesters at UCSC were infiltrated by the Santa Cruz police, so that we know that the local police are keeping track of who the peace activists are.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to voice my feelings about this, that, you know, that this makes activists even more paranoid, you know. Like, I've been in parades and stuff, you know, rallies, you know, peace rallies, where I've seen these car full of people taking photographs, you know, and it's totally.
Thank you for the opinion, Stuart. Sam,
yeah,
do you have a position on that?
Yeah, I share your concerns. I think I'm not concerned. I'm just outraged that they did this at Santa Cruz. And first of all,
can you give us a little rundown on what they did?
Yeah, I'm not exactly familiar with the story.
Well, there was a military recruiters at Santa Cruz campus, and they did a demonstration against the military recruiters, and you know, it. And I think it got a little bit ugly, but the fact is that these people were, that the defense, Department of Defense was spying on UC Santa Cruz. I said this, I almost laughed. I said, they don't even know there's a protest du jour in Santa Cruz. I mean, to think that there wouldn't be one when military.
They could spend their whole budget here, right?
Came to camp.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, I think we're getting in a world where if we have to worry about, you know, members of Congress, we just assume we're all getting bugged and spied upon. And you know, at first it was like, well, you don't say that. You know, somebody's going to pick it up. And now I think people are just saying, just sort of talking, you know, the mics are there in the corner just say whatever you want to say it, moon it. There are concerns, and we're going to go after them. Dianne Feinstein has asked for a report on it. I've asked for a report. Ann Ashew's asked for a report. It's been brought up in the hearings, and we want to know exactly what's going on. And you know what? The administration is very clever. If you watch this, they never talk about what they've been doing domestically. It's all about this Al-Qaeda telephone tap. It's not about the spying at Santa Cruz, and so it gets kind of lost. You know, it wasn't only Santa Cruz, it was a Quaker meeting on the East Coast that they were also spying on. So
we've come to spying on peaceful groups on purpose, huh?
Yeah, so we're outraged by it. If we're going to get to the bottom of it and stop it.
Well, you know, it's pretty telling. We've been doing it for years. I mean, the federal government does spy on citizens, especially when they're speaking out, and has been doing it for years. So we definitely rely upon you to check that.
I guess we should send you more email, huh?
Okay, Lee.
See, Freedom, we've got Lee. Are you on the air?
Yeah, I am. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a call. You're interested about Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania's bill?
Yeah, I am. First, like most of the other callers, I'd like to thank Sam. I've lived on the Central Coast all my life, and you know, I think Sam does a great job of representing the viewpoint of the Central Coast, which is perhaps not entirely that of Kansas. So...
Hope not.
One of the things, you see difference between people like Pat Roberts and Sam Farr. So one of the things that I'm concerned about is I'm very concerned about a bill that Rick Santorum has proposed that would make it illegal for the United States government to sell or provide any information or service which could be sold or provided by a private company. And obviously that would affect things like certainly the weather service and agricultural forecast and that kind of stuff. I was wondering if Sam might have any thoughts on that, and I'll take the answer off here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's one of those what I call special interest bills. What he's trying to do is protect a constituent provider from having in competition with the federal government. But, we don't I'm very worried about that because the you pointed out the exact same thing that I'm worried about. We have a big, huge weather station in Monterey where the Navy collects all the weather data from every measuring instrument all over the world and actually shares this weather data with other... I've learned that throughout the Cold War, all the Russian data was acquired by us and shared with them, and the weather was never a Cold War dispute. But, now they want to not allow that service to provide... and a lot of it is bought probably very cheaply by the private sector, and then they re-array it for pilots and whatever. So I want to protect the ability of the government to provide basic information.
I'd like to remind our audience that we're here with Sam Farr today, and Sam's email address is samfarr, altogether, at house.gov.org. No, is that right? House.gov.org?
No, just
house.gov. House.gov, great. Sheesh, I need to send more email there, huh? If you have an opinion on what we're talking about, send it in to us. And if you have an opinion on, in general, what the federal government's doing, send it to Sam so we can vote in line with his constituents.
And we're not just restricting to if you're represented by Sam, if you're in Sam's district, but also from people all over California. And, of course, heck, from Amsterdam as well. That's got a call from Lee, or email from Lee in Amsterdam, about in November 2004, someone slipped a writer in a bill at the very late hour, and it was signed into law and everything. And it was so egregious that the next day it was another law had to be written to counter it. And Lee's argument is that in business this is totally absurd, but it seems to be happening in U.S. government quite a lot.
So, yeah, what document management systems? I mean, why don't they use document management systems in government like they do in businesses?
Sam, can you address that?
Yeah, well, yes. First of all, what the federal government, Washington, and Congress needs to do is to adapt the procedures that are, and this is in debate right now in the House as we re-look at the rules on all those lobbying scandals that have gone on. But if we just had the requirements they have in the California State Legislature that every document has to be in print before you can vote on it, and that a copy of that document has to be before you, and any amendments to that document have to be not only in print, the amendments in print, but analyzed as to what the impacts are. You know, the existing law does this, and this amendment would do that. And also have, if there's a cost factor, and then they give you several days. You can't vote on the bill until it's actually been in print and been out on the Internet. so that you can have the feedback. Washington, you can do all this stuff in the back room on a napkin, and sometimes when we vote on stuff, we can't even find copies of it. It's appalling.
Well, why don't you just say we have to abstain from this vote? Is it you don't have enough power to do that?
Make a stand.
No, it's the rules of the House, and the rules are adopted in the beginning of the year when the new Congress comes in. After this November election, the next Congress, the 110th Congress, will have to adopt rules on how they're going to manage themselves, and including, would love to have them, we're working on a rule reform that would require these kinds of procedures, that you had to have copies of legislation and you had to have them available days before you take a vote on it.
Right. One question I have, actually, is you were saying it had to be printed out ahead of time. Why print? Also, especially because you'd, if it's not printed, if it's an electronic form, you can take down an original version, and your staff could print it out.
Well, we're not there yet.
That was a question from us as geeks, wasn't it?
Right, because then if someone
you're assuming that there's a lot of members of Congress that are interested. You know, you got a lot of old timers there, and I guess just like maybe some of your aunts, your older folks. I don't know.
yeah. No, that's very fair.
I get it.
Right. For example, yeah. I guess what I wonder is if someone was able to, if someone did make a change, then there are a lot of really easy to use programs out there to figure out the differences between what was changed. Because they
I know that we have those abilities inside the Congress. I mean, if you've watched a very good process, that is the NexusLexis system that the California State Legislature uses in their Legislative Council. They have one-stop shopping for every idea, whether it comes from a senator or an assembly member or an outsider. All of it has to be run through the Legislative Council's office in Sacramento. So you do have a centralized place that doesn't exist in Washington.
Sam, it just sounds to me from a brief assessment of what you're talking about that California is kind of on top of the game kind of in legislation in some
ways. California is way ahead of the world on its the state of California on its implementation of technology.
And that's because of our governor?
No, that's because this is a state that's sort of invented it all and and frankly, government's been a very good user because they know that its smart application makes for a better management of government.
So would Prop 13 have been passed if we had had this technology back 30 years ago?
I don't know.
Non sequitur there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. All right. So we have a question, a question. What if something like the Oklahoma bombing, domestically rooted terrorism, occurred today? How far would the administration go with this wiretapping, and would that really spur us onward, do you think?
Well, I think that now we're in, as I said, a lot of these areas are new thresholds as far as lawmaking is concerned and politics is concerned. And as you know, the technology is outpacing the ability to make the laws. So it's a lot of it's catch up. I don't know whether the president would come in and suggest that. I don't know that you need more to. We don't believe he needs any more authority than he has. We think he's abusing existing authority by not sharing what he has to share to get a warrant. You know, the warrant process has worked in the United States throughout history, and there's no reason it shouldn't be working today. He's just bypassed it.
So we have Sam Farr on the line with us, and the numbers to call him are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Got a couple of emails from geekspeak.org from the Contact Us location. Let's see. Who wants to introduce an email here?
You know, I've got a question, Sam, for you. What's your stance on electronic voting?
Well, I used it last year over at Monterey County just because I wanted to try it. I thought it was very, very simple. I appreciated that. They did have the paper trail, but you know, it's not one that you don't walk away with your receipt, and you don't when you paper vote anyway. You just all you get is a sticker you voted. But
You get the stub from the voting.
Yeah, that says that shows you what it was your ballot number. I guess.
Right. Right.
And I believe that as long as you can have backup security, that there is sort of the appropriate technology to do it right and to secure it. But I don't know enough about that, and I have to rely on others to tell me how.
I don't think
we ought to be moving forward with it until we can guarantee that it's totally secure.
Yeah.
We've had a show about this. If you want to check our archives, we actually have a long discussion about this specific topic and the technologies involved.
All right.
Maybe next time you're on a plane ride, you'll grab that.
The one community that's concerned about it is the disabled community. I mean, they're interested in it because it allows them better access then Monterey County's sort of been is a trial county to be able to do mail ballots. And from a standpoint of just the old-fashioned sending everybody in the mail a ballot and letting them send it all back, the security's pretty damn good. And but it doesn't allow people with disabilities to be able to vote alone. They have to have, if you're blind, you have to have somebody interpret your ballot for you. And that is they like electronic voting as a better disabled technology.
Okay. Why do they like that better?
Because they can use Braille, and I guess we don't do the paper ballots in Braille.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, also for like hearing impaired, I mean, for visually totally impaired, you could hear the whole thing read to you, you know, from an electronic voice.
Yeah, bring up your headphones.
Yeah. It's not common at ATM machines even.
You know, if we can work out the security and build confidence in the electorate that they're secure, I'm sure we'll move to that technology because it's probably appropriate. But in the meantime, we ought to not jump into it until we can assure it, because losing faith in the voting process essentially destroys our country. And, you know, I think, you know, this data, it is so delicate. It all this depends. And people say, why should I vote? And I said, my God, you know, in Australia, they fine you if you don't vote.
They do? That's awesome.
Yeah, I support that legislation.
Let's vote for that, yeah.
It's like a parking ticket. They just send you a thing in the mail and say, you failed to vote, and here's your $25. You know, you go, it's $25.
Nice.
Some people...
They also have finance reform.
They also have a national holiday for voting day.
Yes,
right?
They also have on their ballot that you can vote for none of the above. So if you want to go and just be a protester, you can do that. And
you still have a voice. Wow.
I like that.
I like that. Pass that legislation.
Do you know what their turnout is by chance? Their voter turnout?
No, I don't. That's a good question. Does it improve turnout? I think our country is now having one of the most dismal turnouts on the planet, and yet we try to model ourselves as a model democracy, right?
It can be frustrating. Give us your wrap-up overview of what you think is happening, where we should be going, and what your constituents are telling you what they want to see.
Well, I think programs like GeekSpeak, frankly, are really exciting to have and very helpful and to get the discussion that you have on the air. But you really need to follow through with petitioning your state and federal and local representatives as to how to... how you believe things are going well, should go. I mean, sort of, as I said, put it into the terms of what's good and what's bad, because the outcome is, should I do this or should I not do it? Or could it be modified? And that's really helpful to us. Yeah, squeaky wheels get the grease, and so if you don't say anything about it, somebody who feels just the opposite, you might. And so their voice is heard and yours isn't. And we're a digital... a world out there, and Congress is a digital community. It needs to be more so, and obviously the more you participate in it, the more you'll make it that way.
So the best way to squeak is www.far.house.gov. Fantastic.
Like
so you're listening to Geek Speak, a program on the Central Coast of California, and our special guest today is Sam Farr. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Thank you for joining us today on Geek Speak. The geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Lyle Troxell, and Miles Elam, with special guest Congressman Sam Farr. Thanks to Rick Philman, today's phone answer, and thank you all for your participation in Geek Speak. I guess without your listening, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Sam, we want to thank you again for taking the time out of your busy schedule. Was there anything else you wanted to let our audience know about events coming up in our district that you're going to be involved in?
Well, Sunday night I'm having a big fundraiser. You can all come to that. It's the Hyatt Regency in Monterey. Unfortunately, it's expensive. It's $125, but that's what you have to do to get elected. And I'll be having town hall meetings, and my office is always open for visits by just calling either the Santa Cruz or Salinas office, and we'll put you in on our schedule.
And what are the phone numbers there?
The phone numbers at Monterey are 424-2229. And just phone that office because that's where the scheduler is.
Thank you, Sam, for joining us on
GeekSpeak.
All
right. Thank you very much. Here's Geek Squeak.
Coming up next is Castle Cottage, but first, the slow report.